Welcome to the Parrot Care Sessions, produced by Talking Naturally, exclusively for the World Parrot Trust. This is a series of in-depth conversations with leading experts, helping you to discover better ways to live with and care for your feathered friends. Hello, today on the Parrot Care Sessions, I'm joined by Dr. Scott Eccles, a board-certified avian veterinary specialist, adjunct professor at Texas A&M College of Veterinary Medicine, a past president for the Association for Avian Veterinarians, a frequent lecturer at multiple universities and conferences in the US and abroad, as well as being an author and filmmaker. His forays into filmmaking led him to establish Avian Studios, where he creates educational media that help teach people about the changes they can make to improve and enrich the lives of their companion parrots. Go to avianstudios.com for videos, blogs, and other information on bird care and interesting avian topics. One of Dr. Eccles' most popular topics, both in his practice and on the lecture circuit, centres around providing enrichment for companion parrots through foraging. He's here with us today to help us understand what foraging is and to educate us in ways to better provide our birds the mental and physical benefits of foraging. Dr. Eccles, Scott, thank you very much indeed for joining me today.
Good morning. It's very nice to talk with you. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss this topic. It's obviously very close and near and dear to my heart, so I really enjoy this opportunity.
Yes, I do feel that we're in very safe hands today. As I said in the introduction, this is a topic that many parrot owners are interested in. So let's start with the basics.
Sure.
What is foraging, and why is it so important for us to provide our companion parrots with foraging opportunities?
Foraging is simply the act of looking for food. So in basic terms, it is just procuring or finding food. The natural behavior of parrots, they spend at least 50% of the day on average looking for food. And when I say 50% of the day, that's 50% of the waking day. Here's where the importance comes in. If you're a bird in a cage and you have food provided in a bowl, there is no foraging. You simply go to the bowl and you eat, and you spend maybe a few minutes to maybe 30 minutes a day looking for food. So it's really, there is no foraging in a lot of captive situations. So the importance here is that we need to look at ways that we can occupy a bird's time in a very productive manner. And that's where foraging comes in, is trying to take a natural behavior and finding ways to adapt it to a captive situation so that we give these birds opportunities to behave more normally.
Is this true for all parrot species, Scott?
I would say for the vast majority. You know, most of the field notes, and really this is where I got my ideas, was looking at field notes on diets of birds in the wild. And if you study the field notes, they're spending the vast majority of that active time looking for food. Now, the inactive time, they're perching, roosting. They're also doing some social, close, tight social interactions with family members, other birds. But the big portion of their active time is spent looking for food.
So foraging, looking for food, is a normal behavior that takes up much of a wild parrot's day. And if they're working hard looking for food, it must contribute to their overall health and fitness. The same, then, must be true for captive birds, too.
Yes. Foraging is a great way to get a bird off its perch potato status and actually moving around the cage, moving outside the cage, becoming more interactive. And then we get into health aspects of that. So, of course, we have the mental health improvement, but we also have the physical health improvement. In fact, I oftentimes use foraging as a means to help manage overweight and obese birds.
So what are some of the health issues that can be brought on by a bird not being stimulated enough in this way?
Well, that's a really good question, because it's not as though if a bird does not forage, it will have problems. It's more that it's going to be at risk of a variety of things. So if we just look at what is normal for a bird, there are, you know, you can say roughly four main behaviors. They sleep, so we're going to throw that in as a behavior. They forage, of course. They're going to be socially interacting with other birds, and they're also going to take care of themselves. They're going to preen or groom themselves. When you take away one of those behaviors, that time must be filled doing either more of the behaviors they can, or they introduce abnormal behaviors to fill that time as well. So if we take away foraging as one of the main behaviors, then again, we're going to have that bird is going to look to fill its time doing something. Honestly, the most common abnormality, I would say, is actually excessive inactivity.
Really? So inactivity rather than plucking or harming themselves?
I think that's the first thing that comes to people's mind, probably because it's the most apparent to us as bird owners. But to the bird, and in my observation, I would say that boredom and inactivity is actually the most common behavior problem. There are definitely other things that we can see, certainly feather damaging behaviors, screaming for attention, and these can be sometimes complex problems. In other words, it's not just a lack of foraging. There may be several other factors that contribute to that. And then we also get into abnormal behaviors. The most common abnormal behaviors that we see are going to be things like self-mutilation, stereotypic behaviors, and the most common stereotypic behaviors can be broken into two groups. We have oral or mouth-beak type stereotypies, and that's where a bird picks up food and just rolls it in its mouth, or picks up something, drops it repeatedly. And then you have the locomotor stereotypies, and those are things where they just do a route trace. They kind of do a trace through their cage over and over, or they go back and forth on the perch, or do a flip.
So in other words, just repeating the same movement over and over again.
Precisely. And those are considered functionless repetitive behaviors. And so those are some of the more abnormal behaviors that we may see as well.
Scott, just so that I'm sure I understand what you're saying here, the lack of foraging is not necessarily the cause of these problems. Other factors could be involved, or even something else entirely.
There's quite a few things that can contribute. And the one thing, again, I want to emphasize is that these are multifactorial problems. It's not just lack of foraging. There's other things that can contribute to these as well.
Is it possible, though, to put into percentage terms how important lack of foraging might be in causing this type of behavior?
Well, that's difficult. When we say that a bird has feather damaging, is it just because of lack of foraging? Well, no, you can have other factors as well. Maybe this bird does need more social interaction. Maybe this bird needs more space in its cage to interact and move around in. Maybe it needs direct access to sunlight. While I think a lot of people, including myself, would like to say, well, the risk is due to lack of foraging, we can't always say that. It would be a nice correlation, but
sure.
I think it's more complicated than that.
And isn't life with birds always more complicated than we think? Just to summarize then, if a bird doesn't have the opportunity to forage, you would say that it's more likely that these behavioral problems will arise.
Exactly. So what we're looking at is an increased risk of developing behavior problems. Or if I have a bird, and I see a lot of birds, pet birds, that do have a variety of behavior problems and stereotypies or feather damaging and so forth, then I'm going to say, all right, let's first see, can we incorporate foraging into this bird's life and make that a portion of the management of the problem? So it is a risk factor.
So just to summarize again, Scott, foraging is in essence just a term for looking for food, and it's something a bird in the wild would typically spend many hours doing. And most importantly, if a captive bird does not have the opportunity to forage, it can get bored and is at risk of developing behavioral problems. That's the problem. So let's look now at the solution and discuss how we can incorporate foraging into our birds' daily lives, the sort of things we should both do and avoid. And lastly, let's talk about how long it might take for a bird to show improvements once foraging has been introduced into its daily life. Can we start then with the basics, with the sort of small changes we can make immediately, and work our way up to items like foraging trees and the more complicated systems that are available to buy?
In simple terms, most people have one food bowl in the cage. So the simple thing to do is place multiple food bowls at different levels in the cage. Here's the trick. Put a very small amount of food in each food bowl. There's too much food in one bowl, there is no drive for the bird to go any further. Okay, so the simple thing is simply start by putting multiple food bowls within the cage. The second thing is you can put something mildly obstructive over the food bowl, such as a piece of paper or a wood block, so that they now have to move that wood block or the piece of paper to get to their food. So first you have to let them know there is food in this bowl. Second thing is we're going to slightly obstruct view of that, so they can still see it, but they're going to have to move things out of the way to get to that. And then you get more elaborate from there. You can start to wrap the paper around the food bowl so that now they've got to forcefully remove this piece of paper or chew through it, even better.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can start drilling holes in wood, large enough holes that you can actually stuff the food into the holes. And now they've got to pick up this block of wood and chew on it. And then we progress from there. Now we can start moving outside of the cage. And, you know, some birds immediately gravitate towards a foraging structure, a tree or whatever. Some are very nervous about it. So what you do is say, well, my bird's never actually been outside of the cage. How do we even get that far? Well, start by putting the bowls on the outside of the cage. So the bird now has to crawl outside the cage. Don't put them on top of the cage. Just put them at a lower level so they have to crawl outside the cage and eat there. And then you can attach a structure to that. It can be, for example, a table, a countertop, or something where it's okay for the bird to get out, and then have a separate feeding area there. So what you're doing, and I always caution people, make sure that you are supervising the birds. Last thing you want them to do is to go out and start running around your house, chewing up molding and finding pieces of metal or plastic and eating them. We can start moving it now to a separate area. Maybe it's just a direct extension of the cage so they can walk from the cage to this other area. And the feeding areas get a little further and further. And then finally we get to a separate structure where the birds are taken from the cage. They know at this point that if they go to this other structure, this is where they're going to eat. They're going to play, they're going to eat, they're going to interact.
Can I just clarify something here, Scott? When you say structure, and I know that we're going to talk in more depth about, for example, foraging trees, this is simply something that allows a parrot to clamber and climb just as it would around a tree in the wild. And like a tree, they're usually just made of wood, and they can be homemade or store-bought, can't they?
Some people make their own foraging trees. They simply construct wood together. I've seen as simple as untreated 2x4 pieces of wood, which are common in the United States. I've also seen them take wood that is local to their environment. There are some trees that produce heavy saps and resins, and I would just try to avoid that. I usually have the owner strip off the bark just in case there's been some pesticides, sprays, or other things done in the local area. And you can simply wash the wood and clean it off. You can kind of partially burn the wood just to kill any surface organisms if you really want to. Some people throw it in the dishwasher, you know. It's just whatever you're comfortable with. And then construct this together. Always start with basic steps. You want to start with something simple because if you get too complicated, especially too early on, the bird may very well get frustrated and decide, I'm not going to do this.
Right.
And then the owners get frustrated. So work with your bird. And, you know, you may find that your bird plateaus with a certain type of toy. In other words, it can't go any further than that. And that's okay. As long as you're occupying that bird's time, it doesn't matter how pretty the toy is. Some birds are masters. I have seen some, I mean, very impressive puzzle-type toys that the birds can tear apart in seconds flat, and that's great. I mean, that's wonderful. It probably takes the owners more time to load the food than anything else. But a lot of birds aren't going to do that. And our goal is not to find the most complicated toy for the bird. Our goal is simply to get that bird foraging and doing productive behaviors. That's our only goal with this.
Sure. Scott, is there a type of toy or a style of tree that you would emphatically say an owner must not use? An absolute no-no, in other words.
Yes. So, first of all, if the item is synthetic, plastic, metal, rubber, PVC, whatever it may be, and the bird can destroy it, don't use it. Plain and simple. If that bird can destroy it and it is a synthetic product, assume the bird will eat it and get into trouble.
Right.
If you make that assumption and don't provide any of those products, you will spare your bird a lot of potential problems. And I still frequently have to go surgically fish out metal, plastic, and other components out of birds' stomachs. And that's not something we want to do. You know, I don't want to have to put a bird through a big surgery like that. So, sure. And as far as tree structures, again, I mentioned if you're constructing it yourself, or actually whoever's constructing it, make sure and look at it. You know, are there metal clasps or are there other things on there that you can imagine that beak is going to pull apart and eat? Just make the assumption that the bird will, and don't use it. So look at the construction of items that you have, whether it's a simple toy, complex toy, a tree, feeding area, whatever it may be. And if that bird can ingest it, don't use it. Again, I tend to pull off the bark. I'm not worried about a bird eating bark. It's just the outer skin of the tree is going to be the first line of defense for toxins and things like that. And it's also location of a lot of insects. So I just kind of like to remove that.
That makes good sense. Scott, as we've been saying, foraging is about looking for food. Are we talking here just about hard, dry foods like seeds and nuts and pellets, or can we use fresh, soft foods like fruit as well?
Well, I think we can do everything. I don't really feel that there's a limit as far as what foods we can include into foraging devices. So a lot of people ask me about fresh foods. Well, if you put them in these toys and they rot and so forth, they're not going to be good. Well, if you have fresh items such as, you know, fruits and vegetables, put them in disposable toys. The easiest disposable toy I can describe would be a piece of paper, just a piece of paper wrapped up. Some people take egg cartons. Here's another great one. Just take an egg carton and maybe cut it into sections where they have 4 eggs, you know, and you close the lid on it, and one side, of course, is a little bit open where you cut it, but put food in there, and they tear into that. And you know what? If they don't tear into it, you throw it away. No loss there. You know, with our dried foods, such as pellets, nuts, or seeds, those can be put into more durable containers that if they sit there for a day or two, they're going to be fine. And obviously, if you're seeing mold grow on the food, throw it away.
Get rid of it, of course, yeah.
You don't want to be feeding that kind of stuff. So yeah, you can do it with any food item.
You've been advocating the provision of foraging opportunities for many years, Scott. Do you have examples to hand, success stories, as it were, of behavioral problems that have been helped by providing opportunities for the birds to go foraging?
Absolutely. And I can, I'll give you several different types of examples. So I want to start with stereotypies, because these, in my mind, are quite prevalent, and they're some of the ones that we can oftentimes modify fairly easily. So oral stereotypies, as I was describing, those birds, when we identify that, are most responsive to foraging. We see that behavior change fairly rapidly when we introduce foraging, because you can think of it, the term is not exactly correct, but like an oral fixation. So mm-hmm. If we're occupying that beak, it cannot perform an oral stereotypy and forage at the same time. They're incompatible.
That's not right, yeah.
Okay, very obvious. Okay, now locomotor stereotypies, again, those are the pacing ones where they do corner flips and go back and forth on the cage. Think of the bear in the zoo exhibit mm-hmm. just yeah. back and forth. Those more often are due to constrained physical environments. They've got too small of a cage, too little space to move around. So when we identify those, one of the things I'm going to try to do is, of course, incorporate foraging, but the other thing is I want to get them more space, which means I'm going to take foraging out of the cage mm-hmm. and put it into an area. In other words, people who have seen the video Captive Foraging have seen the foraging tree, that yes. idea where you have a separate structure where they can go and feed on. And that's an example of how I'm going to help with that locomotor stereotypy aspect, is I'm going to pull them out of the cage, try to get them into an area where they're safe, we're not worried about them destroying the house or getting into toxins or other things, and I'm going to have them forage in a totally separate area. So stereotypies are one thing that we see. Feather damaging behaviors, there are several risk factors for those behaviors that have been identified. One, of course, is lack of foraging activities. Another one is lack of play activity. So these birds that simply do not play, they sit on a perch and do absolutely nothing. And I would say that we have a good percentage being 50-70% of the birds that reduce feather damaging behaviors, if not eliminate them.
Actually eliminate them. Wow, that would be really impressive.
Sure, and if we could do that, that's great. Now, some birds are going to look at this idea and say, wait a minute, you want me to work for food? No, I just go to the food bowl and eat. There's no work involved. So we sometimes have to teach birds to do that. But again, it's incompatible to chew on your feathers and forage at the same time. So you can kind of see the thought process here. If we occupy that beak doing something productive, it does not have the opportunity to do something destructive.
So once again, what we're saying is that if you provide a distraction, provide something to give these intelligent animals to think about, then we can begin to break the cycle of behavioral problems.
Exactly. That's precisely it.
And Scott, once you have introduced foraging, how long does it normally take for a change in behavior to be seen? Or is that too imprecise a question?
No, in fact, it's a commonly asked question. I get this question by veterinarians and by bird owners because they want to say, all right, my bird's got a problem. How soon until it's fixed? When you have a behavior problem develop in birds, as is true in several animals, there are stages of development. Okay, so for example, there's an initial stage where maybe the animal is in an improper setting. Maybe it doesn't have foraging, maybe it doesn't have the right caging, whatever it may be. And that bird is behaving visibly normal to you and I. But inside that bird's head, things are not quite right. This bird's not exactly happy. Now, it's not necessarily mutilating itself or doing anything like that, but it's not exactly happy. Then we go to this next phase, and that is where we actually visibly see the change. So by this time, the bird has already been through a process where it's been unhappy, and now it's starting to physically show a change. So while people do tell me, one day my bird started feather damaging, it just happened one day, okay? And maybe they can even associate it with an event. Maybe they say, you know what, we had some visitors come in, and they stayed at our house for 2 weeks, and now our bird has problems. Well, that may seem like a very clear association. It may not be. And the point I'm getting is there may be factors that have led up to that point, and that may have been the tipping point that took that bird into that behavior.
Right.
But the point being is there have been probably a series of events that have led up to that visible behavior change. Now, let's go on the reverse side. Our bird is already showing problems, whatever it may be, stereotypies, chewing, screaming, whatever it may be, and we incorporate a variety of protocols, foraging being one of those, to help this bird improve. We may have a kind of invisible to us change. Things are improving for the bird, but yet the behaviors are still present. And that does not mean failure. What it does mean is that bird is slowly but surely, hopefully working towards resolution of the problems. And then we get to the visible change or the visible attenuation where that behavior is decreasing in frequency. Here's kind of what we understand from studies. The rate of the development of the problem oftentimes is similar to the rate of recovery. We may be looking at months to years of resolution. And in some cases, we're dealing with birds that have had severe behavior problems all of its life, and we have to look at developmental factors, which we're probably not going to change. Some of these birds may never be normal in our eyes, but our goal is to try to get this bird as mentally and, of course, physically healthy as possible.
So owners have to accept that this isn't simply a case of one day the bird has problems, introduce foraging, and the next day or even the next week it'll be better.
I think that's hard for a lot of people to accept initially. You know, we expect that we're going to do this change and it's going to get better right away. And what I would like to get across is that it can be a long-term process. Here's another important factor. This goes back to development. It also depends a lot on how that bird was raised and what it was exposed to at a young bird. Now, aviculture has changed quite a bit. In response to making healthier babies, they have definitely changed. And I see this change worldwide in talking with aviculturists from Europe and Australia, North America. We're seeing these changes in a very positive manner. Mm-hmm. What they're doing now is they're doing flock rearing. They're rearing birds with other birds of similar or even the same species. They're exposing those birds to toys and oftentimes foraging opportunities at a young age. The development of the young animal brain, whatever that animal is, it needs to get certain exposures. So when we have birds that were reared in isolation, as was common and was believed to be the appropriate thing to do, you know, 20 years ago, so not that it's wrong, it was just at the time we were doing the best we could, those birds that were reared in isolation tend to have greater risk of developing these behavioral problems. They're a little slower to learn new tasks. They're a little bit more reticent to even try new things. So all those factor in as well, and that's why I bring up the developmental history of that bird is also important. So for those owners out there that know what their bird was exposed to at a young age, they may also have a little better idea. Those birds that were very gregarious when they were young, they were playing a lot and doing a lot of activities, those birds have a better chance of improving, learning new tasks, doing more productive behaviors than those birds that never learned those skill sets at a young age.
That is absolutely fascinating, Scott. Oh, look, we've covered a great deal in the last 25 minutes or so. So how about we sum up everything we've talked about here? And this is for my benefit as much as for anyone else listening, because I have learned so much talking with you today. What we're saying is that there are very good reasons for allowing your bird to forage. It's a natural behavior. It's good mental stimulation and good physical exercise. The methods you can use to encourage foraging don't have to be complex, and you don't necessarily need to use expensive materials in the process. A cut-up egg box is a good place to start. And lastly, don't get discouraged. If you don't see a change in behavior immediately, it can take time, a long time in some cases, for your bird to show behavioral improvements.
Yes, and I think that's a good summary right there. First of all, start very basic. Work with your bird and work and try to figure out what your bird can do. And you can always challenge a bird, but make sure that you have those basics in place so the bird can accomplish the foraging. And absolutely, I'm a firm believer that foraging should be a daily component of captive birds. And then we also look at it therapeutically. We say, well, prevention is always the best, but a lot of times we're already at a stage where the bird has problems. Let's look at this as a therapeutic aspect of managing this problem. Foraging going to be one of those things. I always like to make sure they have a good diet, like to make sure that they have fresh sunshine exposure, and then good, healthy interactions with toys, with people, maybe even with other animals.
Scott, you've given us a fantastic amount of information. Thank you very much. Should anyone listening want more information, though, where can they look?
Well, okay, there's several sources now. I mean, I think the video that I made several years ago was probably one of the first ones. That's captive foraging. But now online, you're going to find a lot of resources. A lot of people have fantastic ideas. I've tried to put up some ideas also on the website, the Avian Studios website, and also try to make the point about foraging being natural behavior by showing multiple different bird species and how they forage. But, I think now there are so many different sources and so many ideas. The captive foraging video is going to give people a good basic understanding of the principles and some ideas on how to apply it. And then I think, a lot of these companies that make toys and so forth have created just some great resources for people to learn and understand about foraging. So fortunately, now it's quite readily available. So I think it's becoming quite prevalent in the literature and common discussion of how we can help our captive birds.
And finally, Scott, one thing that does strike me, as a field bird watcher in particular, is that providing foraging opportunities to a captive bird does seem extremely obvious once it's been pointed out. And I can imagine there'll be owners coming across discussions like these thinking, wow, I've been doing this all wrong. And who might even be worrying that they've been inadvertently damaging the birds they care for and love. Can you just offer a few kind words of reassurance that it's never too late to provide foraging?
Yeah, and just I'll have to say, I was one of those owners who, as I would say, or you might have said, did it all wrong. So as a bird owner myself, it took me a long time to understand this and even figure out how to incorporate into my bird's regime and in my regime as well, just my daily activities. You know, I talk with a lot of bird owners. I think we all are interested in improving the health of our birds.
Yeah, of course.
And we all have the ability to improve on that. So there is no fault here. It's obviously the people who are listening wanting to learn more. That's the first step right there. And that's really perfect. I would say, keep working at it. And again, start basic, start simple, and consider this a long-term project, a lifestyle change, not just a short-term modification.
And I should imagine too that once an owner incorporates foraging into their birds' lives, especially perhaps foraging outside of the cage, that they're incorporating something new into their own lives too, that there'll be much more interaction between the owner and the bird as a result. It's a win-win situation all round.
Absolutely. I mean, I think clients, I get emails, and it always brings a smile on my face to hear some of the crazy stories that people have and the things that they've done to help their birds. And you know what? The thing I think you just hit on is there's more interaction between the people and their birds. No longer is the bird just some object in the cage. It's now part of the family and a very interactive part of the family. And that, to me, that's perfect.
Scott, Dr. Scott Eccles, thank you very much for what has been an absolutely fascinating discussion that I'm sure will be a great help for a great many parrot owners.
Well, thank you for your time. Again, I really appreciate this opportunity.
As was referred to in the podcast, Dr. Eccles has produced a DVD about the benefits of foraging for captive birds, which is available online through Amazon. Other titles in Dr. Eccles' Expert Companion Bird Care series are also available, and they're online at www.avianstudios.com. For more information about parrots and current conservation efforts, visit the World Parrot Trust on the web at www.parrots.org. And finally, for more information about talking naturally, please visit my site at www.talking-naturally.co.uk.